shine the light on college students, our lived experiences, and the research to help us thrive. We're coming to you from the Clemson Honors College as a part of CCARE, a special research group in the Creative Inquiry Program. Hi guys, I'm Julia, and I'm a construction science and management major here at Clemson.
Hi, I'm Dina, a sophomore biochemistry and genetics major with an ASL minor.
Hey everyone, I'm Christian, and I'm a junior computer science major.
Hey everyone, I'm Nathan, and I'm a senior computer science major.
Hey, I'm Owen, and I'm a sophomore history and economics major.
And I'm Darren, I'm a senior computer science major with a minor in psychology. So how's everyone feeling today on a scale of 1 to 5, starting out the recording? Julia?
I'm trying to think. Probably, I'd say I'm at like a 4. I feel like I still have like a lingering cold, but, you know, excited for this week. I'm going to Virginia Tech, which I'm excited for. Ooh. Haven't been there before for a game. Nice. Things to look forward to, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'd say I'm at a 4 also. I've had the same issues with the lingering cold, at least so I thought. I've been thinking that was the issue for like the past week, and then yesterday I woke up, I'm like, I know fall is a bad allergy season for me. What would happen if I take Zyrtec? And I did, and gone.
I'm at a 5. Things are going pretty well overall, so no major complaints here.
I'm going to put myself at a 5. I've got a lot of work going on right now, but I finally accepted my job offer yesterday.
Woo.
Nice.
That's a pretty big deal for me. Yes, I'm just kind of riding off of that right now.
Oh, that's so exciting.
I'll go 3. I'm just really middle of the road this like today. I had a very, very busy like Tuesday yesterday, and like I got 2 vaccines over the weekend, so like it kind of knocked me out for a little bit, but I'm kind of back. We'll have to see. I'm excited about the podcast though. Dan?
I'm at like a 4. I found my earring box, so now I can wear earrings again. My ears have been naked the past month, so now I can feel something.
Cool. Well, for the last few weeks, we've been researching burnout and how it affects college students, and we're going to talk about that with you guys today. To start off with everyone, we'll just do another little round robin. How would you describe your experience with burnout through college? Does anybody want to start?
I can start.
Okay.
I'd say like starting off, like I didn't have burnout. Like obviously, like it's a new experience. You're coming in with like energy and excitement for what it has to offer because it's just so unfamiliar to you. But then I'd say the most burnout I had is right now during my senior year. So like definitely senioritis is fully kicking in right now. So I'd say probably like throughout my years, it's just increased until my senior year. That's where like hit the peak.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned senioritis. I feel like I caught that my actual senior year of high school and I never got rid of it.
Yeah.
It was like the precise moment when I realized I wasn't really a fan of education. Mm-hmm. And that has remained true, especially now. We're going to touch on it later, but this semester I've been working on my college while also having a job. And that's been a whole new beast of school feeling meaningless.
Yeah, as somebody who's only a sophomore, I would say that like I'm still like somewhat like optimistic and all starry-eyed about what I do. And so as a result, like feeling like jaded or burnt out hasn't really set in yet, but I can feel it slowly start to creep in. And so I've had to like reckon with that and like think about what my coping strategies are going to be for when I'm more burnt out before it actually happens.
No, Owen, we brought you on to be the chosen one.
See, I feel like, Julie, I know that you mentioned that you felt like you didn't experience much burnout at like the very start college, and Owen, you're obviously in a similar position. Mm-hmm. I feel like I kind of got thrown into burnout like very early on. Mm-hmm. I've talked about this before, but you know, being a freshman coming in during COVID, all the classes are online. That in itself just does not do a whole lot towards making you feel like your own work is like valued, right? Mm-hmm. So that wasn't really amazing, but also I've just been doing so many things over like the past couple of years. This is actually, I would say, the very first semester where I truly don't feel burnt out, which
wow.
I have to say.
That's nice.
I actually get to see him in the apartment these days, and it's not when he's on a business call or like doing homework. He has been the busiest guy I've known the entire time I've been at school. We live together, for those who are not aware. So I see this guy constantly, but way more this semester.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. I think I experienced burnout the most during my sophomore year. During my sophomore year, I had to balance a lot of different classes, extracurricular activities, and applying for internships. So I felt like there was a lot on my plate, and like my entire future depended on performing yep. well over the course of that year. So that added a lot of stress. But now I'm a lot more calm.
That's good. Yeah. As the fellow sophomore who hasn't been through too much of college, I mostly saw burnout in like my friends, like the exam season spring semester last year, my freshman year. A lot of them were like, I'm going to change majors because I felt so much burnout from studying so much from the exam, or like they didn't see like the amount of effort put into actual words. Like they got a lower grade than they wanted and stuff. So I saw it mostly through other people.
Yeah, I mean, like, I even, my freshman year, I didn't change majors, but I changed degrees. I switched from a Bachelor of Science to a Bachelor of Arts because I saw the future for me, which was doing six of the same class every semester until I left. And I was like, oh no. And I heard that I could not do that. So I opted for it. But I knew a couple people that like abandoned engineering, abandoned computer science, just... It's kind of brutal.
Let's just say the biochem department's probably a little bit lower than it was freshman year.
All right. So off of that, what would you guys say are your sources of burnout that you've experienced?
We should touch on this first because I feel like I'm going to want to bring it up a bunch. One of the articles we read, I'm going to make sure I find the citation properly. Here it was. Okay. It was from Williams et al. It was called More Pain Than Gain, Effort Reward Imbalance, Burnout and Withdrawal Intentions Within a University Student Population. And it was from 2017. So it talked a lot about this concept of an effort reward imbalance being where you put way more energy into something and get very little out of it in terms of feedback or pride in what you did. And I think that for me, at least, like my college experience, upon reading that article, I was like, oh yeah, like that's the thing that's been contributing to me feeling like, you know, my classes are meaningless, like I'm frustrated with the work I have to do because it's not for anything. Like, especially after having worked in a real job, especially I did a co-op for like 8 months straight where I was just doing work that I was getting paid for that they needed to be done. And I came back and now a professor is assigning me something that's intentionally difficult, not telling me I did good when I honestly didn't do that great. It can be really, really frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think based on that, like something I wrote down was like having multiple roles or multiple jobs, so kind of splitting where your mindset is. And I think that kind of relates to effort reward imbalance because you're putting in effort into a bunch of different baskets, but you're splitting it across a bunch of different roles. So you're not getting as much reward back from it because instead of just putting all your energy in one direction where you would see more feedback from that, splitting it kind of takes a lot of energy and you're not getting as much back from it.
Like you're pouring 100% of yourself into all of your different work, but from the perspective of the people, you know, that are above you in, you know, your classes, your job, they're getting like a third and they're like, what, this sucks.
Exactly.
And it's not even a full third because you've got all this extra energy trying to switch between the, you know, four things you're doing.
Yeah. And even for some of those buckets, it's some of the effort that you're putting in isn't effort that comes from your own passion. It's an externally motivated thing that you have to do because, for instance, like nobody's really, really stoked to do like 60 pages of like calc homework or whatever. That's something you just simply have to do because you know it'll bring a long-term reward later down the line of getting good grades, leads to better job prospects, etc. And so, but those long-distance rewards, the ones that are super long-term and far out into the future, are really, really hard to perceive in contrast to like more short-term, immediate feedback loop type stimuli. And I think that can certainly contribute to burnout.
See, I feel like that's one of the main sources of burnout for me. It's not just like the ERI, the like lack of balance between the effort being put in and the reward that I'm getting from it, but continuously doing things with like the intention of this will benefit me later. This will benefit me later, right? Because that is what so much of college is. You're spending all of this time, putting in all of this effort, feeling burnt out, putting in this energy, not getting much back. And it's all so that way, when you leave college, you will hopefully be in a better place. And that's great for post-college you, but it does not do a lot for current you, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. All of the reward that you would experience, hopefully in the majority of other areas in your life, you aren't going to be experiencing for most people until 4 years after. And that, I think, takes a toll on a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm. Dina, did you have something you wanted to add?
I mean, I agree. Like, I feel like in terms of high school, you work 4 years to get that college acceptance. And then in terms of college, you work 4+ years to get that degree and hopefully that job, depending on what kind of career path you want to take. But you also need those little like rewards in between, like you guys were saying, to like fill up that gasoline tank of effort until you get that piece of paper that says your degree.
Yeah, it's really one giant chain of delayed gratification in that like it's like a weird model of like self-denial of no, I can't have the thing I want now. I have to put all of my excess resources into the thing I want a long time later. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's easy for college students to assume that like that'll go away like once they get a job, but really like that same pressure will like then like be focused towards, oh, I gotta save for retirement, I shouldn't enjoy the money I have now, but shuffle it away so future me can enjoy it 30 years later.
You know what all of this is reminding me of? You know that experiment that they did where it's like kids sitting in front of a marshmallow?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you'll get 2 marshmallows if you wait 5 minutes. I feel like that's just what a lot of college is.
I'm going to have to look that up. I've never seen that.
Oh, if you've ever taken a psych class, they tell you about the marshmallow experiment. It's a good way to segue into something we discussed during one of our discussions earlier this semester, where we talked about, you know, delayed gratification and like the now versus the future, and how everyone right now is told, and it's like almost beaten into your head, that like you're doing this for you, but you just can't tell yet. Like it's all so important, but you won't know any of the results for like a long time. Mm-hmm. And it can be frustrating knowing that, and knowing that you should like care enough about all of it and like feel that reward of like, I did it. I won't see it just yet, but like, I know I did it. I'm good. But it's important not to beat yourself up for not being able to, you know, extract your head from now. It's what we're built for. It's a very natural thing to worry about the immediate and the now over anything else. So making sure you take care of that is, you know, it's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. I think it can be especially a challenge when considering courses in terms of getting your grades back for the assignments that you work on. Because even in that case, the sort of short-term reward that you get can still take weeks, if not months, for the professor to get back to you with your grade and see how well or poorly you did on that assignment. And even then, you might not have the chance to fix it. So it can be especially a challenge there to sort of navigate that stress over the span of the semester with all the different classes that you may have.
Yeah, definitely. I guess like talking about professors, one of the questions we had here was, research highlights the importance of being valued by your professors. How can educators play a role in reducing burnout among college students, and what strategies can they employ?
I mean, very quick grade feedback is a slippery slope. Not a slippery slope, but it can often end up being a trade-off, where if you want consistent feedback, especially in a large class, it's going to end up being from a TA and not the actual professor. And meaningful feedback from a TA is also valuable, but when the person talking to you every day in class is also the person that said, hey, you did a good job on this, it's very beneficial. I think, unfortunately, a lot of the onus does fall on the student to make that bond with the professor, especially in a class that large, where, I mean, a professor already has their own issue with, you know, their priority is often research, and then teaching is this secondary thing for them. And, you know, reaching out to all of their students and becoming their best friend and like mentoring all of them is like number 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. So it's tough, but it's definitely rewarding. We talked about it a lot on our belonging episode, but like making those bonds with staff can be very beneficial.
And I think professors, for them, just showing that they care like a little bit goes a long way if they like actively reach out and do it. Like I've had several professors who have essentially said, if you are like struggling mentally and it's impacting your coursework, don't be a anonymous face in the crowd. Come to me, talk it out. We'll figure out some sort of solution, because they would rather me like, they would rather somebody come in and be upfront with what's going on than just be another anonymous C as a result of not being open about one's struggles.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, sorry, did you want to go?
That's fine.
One of the things that my professors have done this year that I really liked is like they would send out in the beginning of the semester like a survey or like a question like, what are your aspirations in your career and what are you looking forward to this class? So like, for example, my economics course right now in construction, she was like, what do you want to do? And so I wanted to go into real estate investing. So it kind of put that class into perspective for me of like, how can I make it apply to my goals? And maybe teachers can take that feedback and kind of make it more applicable to what their students want to get out of the class rather than just sticking with their standard curriculum, just giving back the grades. So kind of making it more interactive in a way that reaches beyond the classroom and more for long-term goals like we discussed earlier, to kind of keep reinforcing that message of how what you're learning right now is going to be applicable to what you want to do.
Yeah, to piggyback off of Owen's point, even the professor showing just a basic level of care and sort of prioritization of like the students and their mental health can go a long way for students, because I've had professors really emphasize early on into the class that, hey, if my assignments are causing any sort of stress to a point in which you feel like you can't fully operate like you normally would, don't worry about it. We can work on like an extension for that assignment and things like that, which goes a long way to show that the students have at least one person on campus who cares very deeply about them and their mental health and can really help motivate the students going forward from that point.
Yeah, just anecdotally, I have this one economics class right now where at the start of every week, the professor will ask us to rate how stressed we are or how stressed we feel on a scale of 1 to 5. And she'll like read the room. And if like the stress level is above like a certain average, the follow-up question will be, okay, how much of that stress is coming from my class and the work that I assign? And just like having that level of awareness that students have other commitments. They're not just like solely devoted to like the one class that the professor teaches. Having that awareness, I think, is a great thing.
Anyone else got anything to add?
I would like to say that like the classes where I feel like my professor has considered the fact that I have more than just the one class of responsibilities always makes me much more motivated to finish their work and like, you know, attend their class, things like that. But when I feel like my professor is looking at me like some sort of pawn in their game and I have to dance along perfectly or I'm like insulting them, I can get really frustrated feeling like, I guess, demeaned by that. Cause like you've got other responsibilities. You should understand that I also have other responsibilities.
I was just going to say, I think that segues really well into another topic that we wanted to discuss, which is not only managing like work-life balance, but also school-life balance. And for a lot of people, work-school-life balance.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there are a lot of different things that people have to juggle all of the time. And from a professor's perspective, it can be really easy to kind of view this as, you know, school is your job, right? And to a certain extent, that's true. However, there are other, as everyone knows, there are other classes, other professors that students have to accommodate to, but also there a lot of times are just actual jobs that students have to accommodate to. So, I mean, college is expensive, making enough money to actually afford being able to go to college and just live while also taking all of your extra time and putting that towards classes can be a lot to manage.
Our discussion that we had about that was mostly motivated by an article we read by Schramer, Cartolo, and Rauti and Quantes called Examining Burnout in Employed University Students. It was from the Journal of Public Mental Health, and it was in 2020. So, like, that article found that there was a pretty strong positive correlation between burnout and employment, and then it resulted in really poor academic outcomes where students would have to take less credit hours if they were working more hours and then, you know, spend longer in college, pay more money. And there was also a pretty decent correlation between burnout and work engagement with their actual job. it was just, it was pretty rough all around. One of the things that really resonated with me, especially given that I'm doing this exact thing this semester, is it's nearly impossible to schedule a meeting with like a group project. You know, you have your scheduled class times and you're good with those and you communicate those to your employer, and then you're doing this juggling act, and all of a sudden one of your classes is like, all right, you guys now have to meet once a week for an hour. And that doesn't sound like a huge ask, but when your schedule is that crammed and everyone else has all their other stuff going on, it can become not even feasible for you to meet. And that can be really frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you end up meeting at like the dead of night in mm-hmm. like the weirdest of mm-hmm. places, or like on Zoom and everyone's at home.
Yeah.
Like times where you really should be resting and separating that school and that life part of your mind. Because I remember freshman year, one of the biggest problems, especially when I lived on campus, it was hard to separate school and like living and doing regular stuff. And that really attributed to like the burnout I had associated with school. Because it's one of the biggest things I heard is like, don't do your work on your mm-hmm. bed, because your bed is where you're sleeping and you should be resting when you're sleeping. But when you live on campus, which a lot of first years do, it's hard to separate that, especially since a lot of people are living away for the first time. You don't know how to separate that as well as when you were in high school or middle school.
You hit that right on the head. I feel like one of the most dangerous things, and why college is so, you know, burnout centric, is like school doesn't have those just concrete boundaries that work normally does. Not all jobs, but like, you just have work you need to get done normally by midnight on certain days. And so, you know, if you need the time to like relax, do an activity, go hang out with people because they're free, like you've got that looming over you where if you were just, oh, I'll do it at work tomorrow, you can completely free your mind of it. And then obviously, like we were talking about, when you also have a job, your job has those strict hourly rules. And then where does school fit in? At night. And then when do you do anything?
And also with school, it's like you have to study, and then studying mm-hmm. isn't really I'm done with this assignment. Yeah. Studying mm-hmm. is forever in your mind.
You're never done studying.
Studying never leaves.
Yeah. For me, like the idea of separating school and social life ties a lot into like the broader idea of separating one's intrinsic motivations and extrinsic motivations, and that you shouldn't let your intrinsic motivations, your passions, the things you genuinely enjoy, like seriously like overlap with like the extrinsic things that you have to do. Like anecdotally, me myself, I have a philosophy that I will not do any schoolwork or think about schoolwork after midnight, and that I want some degree of time for myself, and I will not let the external pressures infringe upon that time space, if at all possible. And I think like setting like those hard boundaries for yourself of not letting school creep into like every single like permeable aspect of your life, I think that's a super important thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. And like you said, like having those boundaries for yourself, allocating time for yourself and something that you enjoy intrinsically, I think also like just boost your psychological resilience to keep on going with those pressures that are associated with burnout. I know one of our articles that was done by Gong, Wang, and Zhang that was called College Students Learning Stress, Psychological Resilience, and Learning Burnout, Status Quo, and Coping Strategies. They said that a high level of psychological resilience had a more positive cognitive style of reality in the future, and holding a higher level of self-esteem that is correspondingly higher, and they're more inclined to use coping strategies to help with problems and emotions associated with burnout. So I think definitely just having that positive resilience that is reinforced by having time for yourself can help with the getting rid of those periods of burnout.
It's important to try your best at that, especially because we're all brand new to this whole scheduling our entire lives thing. You know, it's our first time having full control over our schedules. I mean, you know, you sign up for your classes, you don't know when they are, but like, because of that, it's hard to conceptualize how much time you'll need to do certain things, and we love to overcommit. because something sounds like it's a good opportunity. Something might be good on a resume. Like, it's something we feel we should do. So you just sign up for it, and all of a sudden your time's just bleeding away, and like, you're going to do worse on all of the stuff you committed to. It's dangerous.
Yeah, generally speaking, humans are kind of terrible at estimating how long a project is going to take.
Mm-hmm.
Just, at least for me, I'm a huge procrastinator. So, like, somebody asked me, like, oh, how long will, like, say, like, certain research papers, whatever research project take? And I'm like, oh, I can get that done, really, if I grind it out in 2.5 to 3 days. My deadline's 2 weeks away. And, like, suddenly I blink and I find myself 12 hours before the bell, feverishly working on it. And I'd say that can certainly exacerbate burnout if you're not able to set like a clear timetable and clear expectations of just how much of a time commitment you're getting into for each specific thing.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned like having activities that you were intrinsically motivated to do versus extrinsically motivated to do. Could you guys describe the relationship to activities that you associated burnout with compared to activities you had a lack of burnout with? And what was the difference between those two and your attitude or how you went about experiencing those?
For me, the biggest example would be classes versus my extracurricular activities. So with classes, I feel like I have to do the work, versus with extracurricular activities, I feel like I get to do the work, which helps to make the work itself feel like a lot more smooth, because I know the immediate sort of reward that I get from those extracurricular activities. I'm doing something that I'm really passionate about and genuinely enjoy working with the people who I'm with at that time. Versus classes, it's like I'm doing this for my future self 4, 5, maybe even 10 years down the line, and having to figure out how exactly to motivate myself in the now for those sort of rewards in the future can be very challenging and, of course, lead to burnout.
See, one instance of experiencing burnout versus not experiencing burnout for me, and I know this is actually the complete opposite for a lot of people, I was infinitely less burnt out when I was at work. Like, over the summer during my internship, infinitely less burnout than I ever am when I'm at school. And I feel like one of the reasons behind this is, first off, it ties into that idea of rewards now versus rewards later. You know, of course, it's an internship. It's going to be a thing that will help me out in the long term, right? But also, like, I'm getting money for it right now. I'm seeing the product get built. I'm seeing people use the thing that I'm building. There's a lot of rewards that you're immediately getting there. In addition, I feel like one difference between managing work-life balance and managing school-life balance is that work-life balance, it's like the onus on making sure that you aren't getting burnt out is like partially up to you. You know, try not to procrastinate, actually do a good job. But also, if you're being overworked, a lot of times you're going to be on a team, or you'll have like a manager and you can talk with people and kind of like reshift how much work you currently have on yourself. Whereas when you are at school, there are very few opportunities where that will happen. You'll have some professors who will like offer extensions and things if you're feeling burnt out. But for me personally, those opportunities have been very far and few between. So I feel like when I'm at school, like in addition to the difficulty scheduling things and in addition to all the different things that I'm having to manage, just like all the onus being said, this is on you. This is something that you have to do. Whereas in other aspects of life, that's not completely the case. I think it has a pretty significant effect on how I experience burnout.
Mm-hmm. For me, I noticed, especially for things I'm more harmoniously involved in or like intrinsically motivated to do, I have the ability to step away from those activities, mm-hmm. where it's not something I have to do, but it's something I want to do. So like, I love hiking. Like, it's not something I'm like, I have to wake up and I have to go hiking every day, like, or else like something bad's going to happen. It's something that I can walk away from and go do again. Or even like cooking, like it's something that I don't have to do, but I mean, like I could heat up like a meal in the microwave, but like so I have to eat, but it's something I can do at an involvement level that I want to do. And I get reward out of it intrinsically for doing it, versus like schoolwork. It's like you have to do it for a grade or something like that. So I just noticed that I develop a more cynicism towards things that I have to do, where it's like I kind of downplay its importance in my life. And I'll notice like my attitude shifts toward it, where I'm like, especially now during my senior year, I'm like, oh, I don't really want to do it. Is it really that important? But you have to keep reminding reminding yourselves again of those long-term goals associated with it.
I'll give one interesting example of something that, to me at least, different facets of it can be both intrinsically and extrinsically motivating for me, and that is music. In that, for music, when for me it's purely as a hobby, like when I'm like sitting in bed playing my guitar, that's a very like passion-based thing. That's something like I genuinely enjoy. But the trouble comes when so I play in a band back home. The trouble for me comes when the external like factors of like going out and like playing a show and like having to like perform really, really well and like just totally be on my A game. That to me is something that can be a bit more burnout inducing. Like I remember this summer I played 4 shows in the span of 7 days.
And wow.
By the end of that, I was very, very tired because it was just, I had to like constantly lock in and it felt a little bit alienating because like the thing that I like lean on for like emotionally recharging, like was in and of itself being an emotional drain. And so for me, like having to like take a step back and like set the boundaries of this is something that recharges me, it brings me joy, and this is something that I do but can still be draining. Like separating those realms is a bit more difficult sometimes, and I don't know. I just think it's interesting.
That reminds me of the passion paper that we read that was talking about the two different types of passion versus not being passionate about what you're doing, the harmonious versus obsessive passion, with the Saviel Barrow Ek Kenrode and Maley 2018 paper Passion and Burnout in College Students, where they found that college students who were more passionate about what they were doing experienced less burnout, but they were also able to separate that passion into two groups, harmonious and obsessive passion, where harmonious, you did it because you simply liked it, and then obsessive was like you had extrinsic values for why you were passionate about what you were doing.
Mm-hmm. I've definitely met a lot of people in my major. I know it's likely the case for a lot of others, but like you can tell that they're there and they're taking every opportunity that comes up in front of them. They're absolutely grinding on every assignment. They've got the 4.0. They're doing interview prep in all their free time. And I mean, obviously this is a perception from what they'll tell you. It's not, you know, the full picture, but I can only imagine that if you find yourself stuck in that loop where it feels like every single second of your life has to be dedicated to your career, I can't imagine that being a very fun existence. And at the very least, if I was in that scenario, I don't think I'd be in college anymore.
I see that a lot in pre-med students, or I guess, ooh, I just surround myself with pre-med students. I'm not pre-med, but I saw that a lot in pre-med students, where a lot of them go start off in pre-med because their parents are doctors, or their parents want mm-hmm. them to be doctors. They want that honor. And a lot of money comes with pre-med usually. So they start off doing pre-med knowing it's a lot of work. And while they think it's harmonious passion with science and being a doctor, it's actually obsessive passion that's coming from, oh, I want the money, oh, I want the honor, oh, I'm doing this for my parents rather than I'm doing pre-med for myself. And I feel like you need that passion because that road is so years long, not even just undergrad, med school, residency, mm-hmm. being a doctor. You need that like good engine of passion. And then I see a lot of pre-med students changing their majors once they realize I can't do this with just the my parents want me to do this.
It's really easy to like make up a story about why you're doing something and then just buy into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've noticed an interesting dichotomy between like the broad collection of STEM majors and like the broad collection of humanities majors, and that I've met quite a few STEM majors who are definitely more passionate about the humanities than they are about STEM, but there are those external factors in play, and that generally speaking, like STEM jobs, you'll make more money from them. Generally speaking, things like being a doctor is more prestigious, and you very rarely see the opposite effect in the humanities sphere where somebody's secret passion is in STEM. A lot more people are doing humanities because like it's their genuine passion. They know darn well that it's not going to be a moneymaker for them.
Yeah, I want to be a mechanical engineer, but I'm getting a history degree for the money. So.
Exactly.
I'm a starving mathematician, but I need to be an English major.
Yeah, I guess that's classic stereotype, the starving mechanical engineer who makes mechanical engineering projects in their studio apartment and sells them for $30 on the street.
In New York City.
And I guess just to wrap things up on maybe a more positive or like advice note, what are some overall traits or techniques that are used to mediate burnout? If you could just like rattle some off that maybe help you guys out.
The thing that always helps me the most, at least like, it's the feeling of, okay, I can actually like set aside this, put my school brain down over here on a counter and just go pick it up on Monday. And it requires you to really like get that work done ahead of time. But especially when I have something that I am passionate about that I want to work on, or even just an event with some people that I really want to spend time with and be fully present, using that as my motivation to get through my work, because it's obviously work that I do care about and I want to complete, you know, for my future. But then using that, oh, but I could feel like free for a day, like that as my immediate motivator to get it through is very helpful.
I think one major thing that helps a lot is just having a community of like-minded people who are in a similar space as you are, even if it's just to sort of congregate and complain about whatever classes you all are taking, can really help, because it shows that it's not just you alone who are experiencing it. Because I know a lot of times it can get to a point where you get into the cycle of thinking that you're struggling with it because you're bad or you're stupid or incompetent at whatever the task is. But seeing that other people are going through similar things and really learning off of like how each other are sort of managing the stress can really help out a lot.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, one other thing that like I've noticed helps with burnout a lot, both in terms of my own experiences and is also supported by like the scientific literature canon, is physical activity of some sort. And there's just one study in particular that I'm looking at. It's Chen Liu, Mao Zhao, and Guo, How Physical Exercise Impacts Academic Burnout in College Students, The Mediating Effects of Self-Efficacy and Resilience. And I'll just read some of the summary points from here. More physically active university students have more benefits associated with lower academic burnout, such as better sleep quality, greater self-control, and lower physical vulnerability to stress. And yeah, just at least from my own experiences, that certainly helped a lot in that being able to like take a break for like an hour or so and like do something that like is like taxing on the muscles but not so taxing on the mind is certainly helpful. Like at least like still living on campus, like I'm just a stone's throw away from the gym, and so whenever I have like some sort of like writer's block or just can't really focus anymore, like I go to the gym, I do a workout for 45-ish minutes, and then I'm back and I feel like a fresh and completely new person.
Something I have found very, very beneficial, but something I don't do nearly enough is swimming, because when I swim, I can't have like headphones on. I'm in the water. So it's just, you know, you're straining your muscles, but you're also just thinking. Mm-hmm. And like, it's almost like a form of meditation. And, you know, meditation is also extremely beneficial, but hard to convince yourself to continue doing because, you know, you're just kind of sitting there, you get restless. I have homework to do. Yep. But if you can do like, oh, well, I'm working out, this is important. You just kind of sit there, you think through your problems. You don't necessarily have to come up with anything, but just having that ability to sit with it. It's a lot like sleep. Mm-hmm. You know, you just give your brain a minute to catch up.
Yeah, nice. I do a very similar thing with running. Mm-hmm. Like I'll go on like a low tempo run, like towards like the end of my day. And that's not so much for like the cardio benefits or the exercise or whatever. It's a time where it's just me and I'm able to just like take a step back and like any problems that I have in my head, I can turn them over. I can look at them from new angles and just think about it. And like having like that space to myself has certainly been super, super helpful.
Yeah, I think just having some sort of physical activity definitely helps out a lot. Even if it's just for the fact that it allows you to feel like you've completed something in that day, it definitely helps to sort of kickstart my day, because I work out early in the morning. It makes me feel like, all right, I already have the ball rolling. I can just take this sort of momentum and push forward with the rest of my day.
I will also say, I feel like for me, sleep is a really big part of making sure that I'm not feeling burnt out. So, you know, having a good sleep schedule is really important. But also, there is nothing in this world that will make me fall asleep and like sleep better than doing a workout. Doing one of those right before I go to bed necessarily, but like, you know, a couple of hours or so before like I'm planning on going to bed, even if it's just as simple as like doing some pushups in my room, man, I sleep so much better. And I feel that does so much more for me.
I'm imagining you like doing one arm pull-ups while brushing your teeth.
Oh yeah. Gotta go to bed. Every day.
300-pound deadlift before you go to bed.
Just slam it on the floor, jump into bed.
Tuck yourself right there.
Yep.
But yeah, on a more serious note, I feel like one thing that was really helpful, has been really helpful for me, is not immediately saying yes to opportunities that come in front of you. And this is something that Darren was chatting about a little bit earlier. I am definitely someone who, like, over the course of college would just like be like, oh, this is an opportunity I could do. Yes. Right. And don't get me wrong, like that has worked out in quite a few ways, but it has definitely resulted in me feeling burnt out for a long period of time. One thing that I have found, particularly as of late, that has been really useful is an opportunity would come in front of me, and I like usually don't, in most cases, I feel like you usually don't have to immediately accept or decline it. Like, you can take a few days and think on it, and that in itself is really important. But one thing that I have found has been really useful is having like a Google Calendar set up, and then being like, okay, if I were to do this, what would my Google Calendar look like? Oh no, that looks terrible. Never mind. I've done that a couple of times, and it is, I think it has saved me. So for the non-calendar users out there, I was just like you for a long time. It's worth it.
It took a lot for me to get convinced to do it, especially like getting yelled at by my girlfriend for like, why don't you know when that you have a thing? I'm like, I forgot. I did. It's nice though. The calendar is a big lifestyle change. Mm-hmm.
Google Calendar is the best thing in the world. I love seeing all the colors. I'm so busy, but it looks so pretty.
I keep my whole thing monochromatic. Am I a crazy person?
Yes.
Why?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
You're supposed to separate it by
Oh, it's purple.
I don't buy into the digital planner or digital calendar lifestyle. I have one on paper because it's more cathartic. Whenever I'm finished with something, I can like scribble it out like, like with a lot of purpose, and you know, it's a very good feeling.
All right. Well, we are coming up on time here. So yeah. Does anyone have any last little takeaways or notes or comments that they want to throw in here towards the end?
I did want to quote an article that I really liked. I'll cite it very quickly after I quote it, which it was an article that surveyed social workers at one specific university, and they had a free response section. And I wanted to quote one of them who said they were, quote, never fully present in any of the settings I need to be present in, school, work, and personal life. And it really resonated because when I'm even here and I'm thinking about the rest of my day, I've got a work meeting I need to attend at like 2:30. I've got a lot of work I need to pour into my capstone project today. It's a bunch of different ambiguous, strenuous, figure it out kind of problems. And I've been worrying about that while we've been recording the podcast. And that's a moment where it feels like I should be very present. Like, we're sitting here together recording something that we're about to put out, and I'm thinking about my meeting at 2:30. And I found that frustrating. So let me quickly cite that article. Sorry, I am reading my script from my phone instead of my laptop today, so I can't have multiple tabs open. It was by Benner Curl. Yeah, it was from 2018, and it was called Exhausted, Stressed, and Disengaged. Does Employment Create Burnout for Social Work Students?
I think that's a good quote to leave it off on here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's all, folks. We appreciate you listening to our podcast today. We hope you enjoyed it, and we hope that you got something useful out of it. Share our podcast with your friends and family. You know, make sure you're talking about it at the dinner table. You're putting flyers up around your campus. It's real important. Give us 5 stars on your favorite listening platform. And yeah, we will see you all on the next episode of Seek Air in the Spotlight. Have a good one.